welcome to Como Explained. It's a podcast from the KBIA newsroom that takes some of the thorny issues and politics that affect our community and breaks them down. I'm Scott Pham, the digital content director here at KBIA. My co-host today is Abby Fentress-Swanson, an agricultural reporter that works with us as part of Harvest Public Media. Abby, how are you?
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Pretty good. Our usual co-host, Ryan Femuliner, is traipsing about the West Coast on vacation. We wish him well and hold back our jealousy.
I'm jealous.
We're holding it back, Abby.
Oh, holding it back till the end of the podcast.
So Abby is joining us today because she's done a lot of really great reporting on water in Missouri, and that's what we're talking about today. Drinking water in Missouri, how does it work? (:), why does it taste so bad?
Well, that's up for debate. I mean, I don't actually think it tastes that bad. In fact, I'm having some right now from the water fountain here. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah. Yeah. How is it? She's drinking some of it right now. I'm going to narrate that.
It tastes pretty decent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when I first moved here, which is about 2 years ago, I thought it was awful. I thought it was some of the worst water I've ever tasted.
And where were you moving from?
From Oakland, California, where you've lived before.
Yes, I have.
Pretty good water. I don't know if it's the best water in the country. Nobody ever thinks it's bad.
Not as good as New York, where I was living.
Yeah. No, New York has some famously good water, and they say that's the secret behind the pizza and other things there.
Bagels.
Bagels. Exactly. So, so you came from New York to here, and still you didn't notice any terrible water taste.
Well, I did notice. I didn't notice a terrible water taste. But, you know, New York's water comes from the Catskills, and it's virtually undeveloped up there. So that water is really good. When I came here, I was kind of like, this is a little funny, but I didn't really notice a difference in taste, but apparently you did.
Yeah, I did. And, you know, before the show, when we were planning for it, I was trying to think, like, what is the flavor, what is the taste that is bothering me so much? And then I realized I don't actually notice it anymore. I'm not actually bothered by it anymore.
You're so used to it.
I can't in any way detect it.
Yeah, my boyfriend, when he was visiting, also from New York, he turned on the hot water, and it smelled like kind of sulfury to him.
Yeah.
So I don't know really what that's about. Maybe you can tell me.
I think that's what most people are noticing. They're noticing a bit of a sulfur odor and sometimes a sulfury taste, that kind of bitter, some say rotten egg taste.
Ew.
That comes from sulfur. So, yeah, we're going to talk about why that happens.
Okay.
If you think the water tastes that way. If you don't think the water tastes that way, we're hopefully going to teach you something else as well. So, Abby, some of the things that are in the water that gets into your sink or your glass, as it were, are organic stuff from natural water sources.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be plant matter. That's going to be bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get solids and minerals from the earth, especially if you're getting that water not from the surface. If you're getting it from some kind of underground source, you're going to get a lot of rock stuff in there,
mm-hmm.
a lot of metal kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the main reasons why I wanted to talk to you, the third thing that you're going to find in your water is nitrates and pesticides from the runoff of nearby agricultural things.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I'm on the farm beat here. So one of the things I've been following is ag runoff in our waterways. And the reason that can be kind of an issue for many water treatment plants and also for people who drink the water is because water treatment plants have to clean up this water when hundreds of pesticides flow from farmers' fields, especially here in the Midwest, into creeks, streams that dump into reservoirs. I've been doing a bunch of reporting on that, and it's definitely a big deal here in the Midwest.
Yeah, and it's one of those creeping problems, too. You know, a lot of people think it's some kind of small issue that that happens so rarely. But in fact, you actually have, like, farms coming right up to the edge of major waterways where people are drawing water from the sources not very far away.
Yeah.
It's very easy to get those chemicals in the water.
Yeah, and if I can say, especially this year because of this funky weather we've had, I mean, we had, like, very small windows of dry weather for farmers to apply pesticides to their fields. It's created a situation where there's a lot of runoff. Also, all these nitrates, which are the fertilizers, which were applied last year, because of the drought, the corn and soy plants weren't able to absorb them the way they usually do. And so that was sort of, you know, on the surface of these fields. And so that also, with all of these heavy rains we've had, has just really ended up right in our rivers and streams. And so that's another reason that I've been reporting on this this summer.
Yeah. let's talk about why or how we know about the things that are in our water. Mm-hmm. You've actually gone running around in streams and you found this out yourself.
I've had a good time, yeah.
Yeah. Well, where I sit, I mostly get these from documents, mm-hmm. the nerd way of getting information. Mm-hmm. There's every year.
Nerd alert.
I can't believe you did the nerd alert.
Yes, I did.
On the podcast. Oh,
may
man.
May not be the only time.
So every year, water authorities are required to bring out this document called the Consumer Confidence Report. It's kind of funny. I don't know why they call it the Consumer Confidence Report. It's not really about the consumers. It's more about the water. You know, it's not measuring my confidence. It's measuring the water.
Do you feel confident after reading them?
I feel a little bit confused after reading them. You might too. You probably got one of these in the mail a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you did, Abby. It's like a little pamphlet about the size of like a business card maybe, but it folds out accordion style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't gotten mine yet, but we'll look out for it every day.
So that is actually a condensed version of the real Consumer Confidence Report that you can get online. It's pretty easy to get at gocolumbiamo.com. Is that the government website?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I think that's where we got it. But that's basically a average of all the tests they do all year and measuring all the different things that are in the water. First thing you got to know about this report, it comes out every year, but it's actually almost a whole year old. This data, the data in this last report, even though it came out this month, that they did all of those tests in the spring of 2012. So it's actually more than a year old.
Yeah, and some even a little older than that. But this is all 2012 data. So, you know, if you looked at this tomorrow, it would not tell you what's in your water today, right? It's giving you sort of a historical look going back to last year. So anyway, it's somewhat helpful, but it would be great to get some more up-to-date information.
Yeah. Yeah,
I would really have more confidence in my drinking water if I knew exactly right now what it was that I was drinking
mm-hmm.
right now.
Yeah, and you also said that nitrates—that's the stuff that comes from fertilizers.
Fertilizers, mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, really not good to be ingesting in your body.
Yeah,
technically toxic.
Correct.
Right.
And to be—I mean, the EPA is regulating all of this. I mean, there are certain levels where water treatment plants, you know, must clean up the water just for every chemical. So it's not as though, you know, every time you turn on your tap, you're drinking this stuff. But I think, you know, there are certain times of year, especially now, and especially with the weather we're having right now, that, you know, where this is more of a concern. And so that's why one of the reasons we're doing this podcast.
Right. So according to that document, now it's, remember, it's over a year old, but according to that document for Colombia, there are no nitrates detected in the water. Mm-hmm. But, Abby, you were looking at the Boone County report, mm-hmm. which includes all of the smaller towns around us, mm-hmm. a lot of the private water authorities that serve smaller communities, smaller mm-hmm. wells. And you said you saw something there.
Yeah. I did see about three or four of the smaller water districts in Boone County do show that there are nitrates in the water. I mean, they are at allowable levels. Like, we're talking like parts per million here, very small amounts. But Centralia, for example, has one of the highest ones in the county. And maybe that's because there's more farmland there. And then when you start to like take a step back and look at the state, there are some super high areas in Missouri. And again, I don't want to like, you know, raise or cause anyone to like stop drinking their tap water, but in Hannibal and in Louisiana, they're higher levels there, and maybe that's because they're right on the Mississippi River, and so
mm-hmm. Like you said, it's not always something to be worried about, but it is kind of neat to think about where these things come from. You know, like I said, a lot of the heavy metals and minerals are just kind of natural to the system. But if you're seeing nitrates, if you're seeing chlordane, if that's how it's pronounced, mm-hmm. glyphosate, Alichlor, those kind of chemicals, those are not natural to the system. Those are almost definitely coming from agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of ag runoff in our water. I talked to a scientist the other day who said, even though there's no atrazine that's showing up in Colombia's water, there's always going to be atrazine in there just because we have these clay pan soils here in Missouri, which are, according to him, in the whole country are most likely to run off in terms of pesticides because they just don't absorb any water. So, you know, it's probably in our water. Now, that doesn't mean any of us are either going to drop dead tomorrow or anything. But, you know, there are questions about the cumulative effects of these things in our water.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny thing about the topography here. you have this this karst topography.
And is that in southern Missouri or is that all over?
That's here, but I think it's mostly in southern Missouri. Yeah. So when we're talking about karst, we're talking about landscape. I'm reading a definition here. Landscape characterized by the presence of caves, springs, sinkholes, losing streams created as groundwater dissolves soluble rock such as limestone or dolomite. That does two things, right? It's going to take chemicals and bad things that are on the surface, and it's going to bring them down into the groundwater, and that's bad. But it also allows us to get to some pretty good groundwater, which is where our water comes from.
Here in Columbia.
Yeah, here in Columbia, that karst topography allows us to tap into some pretty clean, deep wells that are down at the McBain Bottoms. That's I believe that's on the southwestern corner of Boone County. So you get this groundwater that is kind of partially coming from the river itself, partially coming from rainwaters and everything else that seeps underground. And we get our water from there because it's pretty easy to clean up.
Yeah, and I think maybe, Scott, now would be a good time to really make this clear distinction between groundwater and surface water, because here in the state, I think it's like – you know, most people actually, or more than half of people in Missouri, do get their drinking water from surface water, as opposed to what you're talking about, groundwater. So surface water comes from like the Missouri River, the Mississippi River, from reservoirs. And so that water is way more expensive to treat because it has so much of the stuff that's flowed from fields, from farms, and from other places, but it's all out in the open there. It hasn't been through that, you know.
Yeah, it hasn't had a chance to filter through anything. Yeah, that's important because in St. Louis and in Kansas City, both of those communities are largely getting their water from surface water in the river.
Yeah, and it's very expensive to treat. And as we're going to talk about further, I mean, that the money or the bills that these water treatment plants have to pay for these chemicals, I mean, that gets passed on to us, the ratepayers. And it's pretty serious, and that bill may go up. Chemicals are getting more and more expensive. So, you know, it's just something to be aware of.
So in well water, it's often very clean, but it also – you still have a lot of stuff in it. Even though our water is pretty good, we're going to get a lot of solids in it. There's a lot of minerals, and that's what makes the water hard. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about hard water, talking about water that has a lot of heavy metals and minerals in it.
I don't like the idea of drinking heavy metals, tell you that.
No. And that affects the taste of it a little bit. And it's also going to affect how the water is used in cleaning. It's I believe hard water is more difficult to clean with. And it's also harder on our plumbing infrastructure. So hard water is kind of bad for a city all around. So the McBain Bottoms, those wells there, that's where we get the water. But we also have a treatment plant nearby. So the water kind of filters naturally through the karst topography. And then it gets sent to this treatment plant where first they aerate it. Because the water is underground, it picks up a lot of carbon dioxide, loses a lot of its oxygen, so it's got to get kind of re-aerated. That is going to reduce the amount of iron in it by oxidizing that iron. It's going to reduce the carbon dioxide and also hydrogen sulfide. That's the sulfur stuff that makes it smell so damn bad.
Let's see how this smells. I don't smell anything, but... Yeah. Maybe it's only the hot
water. Maybe that's because of the aeration. If they didn't aerate it, it would be much, much worse. And then after the aeration, there's the filtration. That's getting out the solids and hopefully softening it. So you soften it by adding lime. By adding slaked lime, our hot water gets a little softer. And finally, after the filtration, there is the decontamination, where they actually add something called chloramine, which is a lot like chlorine. And probably smells a lot like chlorine. And that is killing bacteria in it. And we actually leave a lot of that chlorine in it throughout the process. So by time, there's less of it, but by time it actually gets to your tap, there is a little bit of chlorine left in that water. And it's detectable in those EPA reports. But the taste is probably going to be from that sulfur. That the taste of water is usually way more determined by where it comes from and the stuff it picks up there than by whatever is added to it in the cleaning process. So, Abby, you actually spent a little bit of time in a water treatment plant for a story recently on this whole agricultural runoff problem you've been looking into.
Yeah, that's right. A couple of weeks ago, I went up to the Clarence Cannon Wholesale Water Commission treatment plant, and that's in Stoutsville, Missouri, near Mark Twain Lake. They take surface water from Mark Twain Lake and clean it up and provide it to 13 counties in northeast Missouri.
And it's kind of dirty.
It's a little bit dirty, and that's because this water has atrazine in it, and that is the most widely used pesticide, or that is a pesticide widely used by farmers on cornfields.
Of which there's a lot of in...
throughout the Midwest, but there are a lot in northeast Missouri. Anyway, so this nice guy, Mark McNally, the general manager, gave me a tour of their plant, and he showed me this 900-pound bag of powdered activated carbon, which is metered into the water. That's like the first thing they do because there's atrazine in all of this drinking water. It costs like $130,000 a year. I asked Mark McNally, you know, how they pay for these extra chemicals every year, and here's what he told me.
Aunt Agnes, you know, on 3rd Street has to pay more for her water because we have to recoup our money. I mean, we're not in the business to make money, but we can't go broke.
Yeah, so that's Mark McNally telling me that basically the more chemicals we have in our water, the more expensive it is for treatment plants to clean that water up, and that gets passed on to us, the ratepayers.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really important point because, you know, a lot of people say, like, well, we don't really know what atrazine does to our bodies. We're not 100% sure it's a bad idea to be consuming this. But at the very least, you don't want to pay for it, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to pay for something that shouldn't be in the water to begin with.
Right. Yeah. And it's a real, like as I was saying to you earlier, it's a real conundrum because, you know, farmers are growing this corn and beans that we need to export. And I have farmers in my family myself, and it's so important the work that they're doing. But we also need to figure out a way, I think, to do this sustainably so that we, the ratepayers, aren't having to pick up too much of a tab.
Yeah, so you're saying that there's a balance that you want, right? There's got to be a way that farmers can use the tools they need, but it can also keep it out of our drinking water.
Yeah, and the farmers I've talked to agree, I think, agree with us on
that.
Yeah,
it sounds really not crazy when I say it out loud.
Yeah.
It sounds really reasonable. Man.
So anyway, it was a very cool trip up to Stoutsville, and he gave me a whole tour and showed me these sludge lagoons where they have all this gross sediment in them that they need to get rid of somehow.
That's my favorite part of this story.
Yeah, the sludge lagoons.
Yeah, so what do they do with all this sludge? This is all the stuff that settles down from the water they draw from the lake.
Yeah, this is kind of weird and gross. Basically, these contaminants, like what's left of them, sort of are put into these big kind of lake-looking things, lagoons, and ultimately that sludge is taken back to farmers, much of it, who use it on their fields.
Right. So what's happening is that farmers are putting fertilizer in their fields. It's getting washed off into the lake.
Mm-hmm.
The fertilizer, along with sewage and dirt and all kinds of other stuff, winds up in this sludge, and then they buy it back and put it back in their fields.
Yeah. I don't know if they buy it back, but they end up getting
those individual farmers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
Okay, what are some things that we should be aware of in the water? I want to kind of get this down into specifics because I feel like we've been scaring people a lot.
Yeah, I really don't want to. I mean, I do not want to scare anyone. I mean, the fact is all of the tap water we're drinking is tested. The EPA regulates this stuff.
So here are some things that you should be aware of that may have an effect on the water system, but probably won't. First of all, the water system, the water mains, they do get busted up every now and then, kind of regularly, actually. Last year, there were over 100 events in the water system of Columbia.
That seems crazy to me.
It does seem kind of crazy, but really, these are affecting really small areas. These are affecting, like, sometimes just a couple of blocks at a time. So usually these are breakages in the water main or a loss of water pressure that's preventing people from being able to use the water system. And in every one of these 100 breakage events, the solution for that period of time where it wasn't working was just to boil the water. So they never had to shut down the system.
Okay.
They never had to go and do major replacements like that.
Right.
So.
What else do we need to know about?
Okay, now here's another kind of alarm-raising thing. But the McBain Bottoms, that area where we have a whole bunch of wells that we dig real deep into to get our water, that area has really great water, but it's also home to some oil pipelines. So if something ever happened to those oil pipelines, then the whole kind of alluvial floodplain there is probably ruined.
Well, I really hope that we don't get to that point.
Yeah, we have no reason to think that anything would happen to those
pipelines. But good to know it's there, I guess.
Yeah. The point is just that even though it's underground doesn't mean it's just hands off. You know, you still have to kind of pay attention to it.
Can I add something about nitrates, those fertilizers we were talking about
earlier? Sure.
And this really may not affect us right here in Colombia, but I don't know if anyone has family in Iowa or has been following the news up there in the middle of the state. But there are two rivers, the Raccoon and Des Moines rivers, which is where a lot of the drinking water comes from, and they have record high nitrate levels right now. So actually, the water treatment plant there has called for customers to cut back on irrigation. It's basically like odd numbered addresses can irrigate on one day and then even can do the next day. And that's because there are record high nitrate levels there. And that's because of farming for the most part.
Yeah.
So I think, hopefully that won't happen here.
Or anywhere.
Or anywhere. We don't want it to happen anywhere.
Yeah.
But I think that when you're thinking about drinking water and costs, things like this can happen. And it is happening right now in Iowa.
Yeah, I mean, it's important, I think, to think about as another way that it can affect you, right? It's not just cost. It's not just the things that get in your body. It's also, can you even get the water? Will the system be able to handle those kind of contaminants?
Right, that's a thing.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Okay, on that bright note.
Oh, no.
I'm going to end the show.
Can we have a brighter note?
I don't think I have a brighter note. This is literally everything I know about water.
Hmm.
Do you know anything else about water?
I'm just trying to think. Let me have a sip.
Yeah, just get yourself inspired there. Is there any positive front on the agricultural runoff story?
Well, I will say the one thing, because we were able to test for all of these things in our waterways in new ways that we haven't been able to in the past 10 or 15 or 20 years because technology is so advanced, we have a much better sense of what's in the water. And, farmers are much more aware, too, of what they're applying to their fields and what's running off. And they don't want this to happen either. So there are some efforts to try to figure this out. And, hopefully in 5 or 10 years, maybe the levels will go down and we'll be able to see that from testing.
All right.
Maybe not the most positive, but it's
something on the horizon.
A little step. Yeah.
Something on the horizon. Okay, great. All right, well, that's going to do it for Como Explained. I am Scott Pham. My co-host is Abby Fentress Swanson. We just want to remind you, for the millionth time perhaps, that we're on iTunes. We're easy to find. Search for Como Explained on the iTunes store to subscribe and get a brand new podcast in your possession each and every Wednesday.
Pretty good deal.
Pretty good deal. It's free. It just takes a little bit of effort. And then you get to take it with you. You don't have to sit there in your computer and hit that little play button. If you really like us, leave a comment on iTunes. It means a great deal. It helps people find the podcast. It helps us hear from you, know a little bit about you. Email us, news@kbia.org. Tweet us, @KBIA. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
But wait, I didn't get to give a plug for my show.
Oh, man.
Everybody else gets to give a plug for their shows.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I meant to do that at the beginning, but I forgot to write it in.
What happened?
Okay. So every week, you have a little segment on KBIA that brings us a lot of great information. Isn't that right, Abby?
Yeah, that's about right. I do, Scott. And I just want to let people know what it is. It's called Field Notes. It's a very short 3 minutes and 15 seconds of your life in which Harvest Public Media reporters interview a newsmaker or expert about an important issue related to food production or agriculture. So I encourage everybody to tune in. And also, hit me up on Twitter and let me know what you'd like me to cover @DearAbby.
Okay, thanks, Abby.
Bye.